Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm Tom Gilson. Today's episode, Carbon Valley trumps Silicon Valley and shouts intelligent design. Recently, Crossway Books published a weighty tome critiquing theistic evolution, appropriately titled Theistic Evolution, a scientific, philosophical, and theological critique. Because it's an anthology, it's easy to dip into just those articles and authors that interest you. Crossway also put some of the authors behind the camera and asked them to boil down key takeaways from the book. Today, I'm pleased to bring you segments from two of those interviews. The two authors, engineer turned molecular biologist Douglas Axe and Cambridge-trained philosopher of science Stephen Meyer. First up, Doug Axe talks about how relatively simple biological forms vastly outstrip the human technological wonders we find around us.
Okay, we look at something like an iPhone, and it is a marvel, right? A technological marvel. It's far beyond things of yesteryear that were technological marvels. You look at a steam engine, it's complex, but you look at an iPhone, and it's like mind-bogglingly complex. No one could pick up an iPhone or a smartphone of any kind and think that it was an accident, right? We know that thousands of people spent probably millions of hours on the different aspects of this, the different components that go into something like this. It doesn't happen by accident. It might not be quite as obvious to a non-biologist how much more complex even a simple organism, a worm, a firefly is than a smartphone, but it's true. If you look at the inner workings of something as simple as, say, a firefly, you find that it's layer upon layer upon layer of complexity. All these things are very sophisticated in how they function. The mere fact that a firefly comes from a single cell that then develops into a firefly puts it in a completely different league. That doesn't happen with smartphones. Factories make smartphones. Fireflies come from fireflies, and they come from initially an initial fertilized cell. It's absolutely mind-boggling. I think a lot of non-scientists think or assume that biologists have understood this, have plumbed the depths of biology and understand that DNA is the blueprint for making organisms, and it's actually not true. We don't understand this. We understand little bits of it. We don't understand what a genome is doing. We have no idea how a single cell produces an adult. These things are marvelous.
That was Doug Axe, who received his PhD from Caltech and did postdoctoral work at the University of Cambridge. Next up is another Cambridge man, Stephen Meyer, Program Director for Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, author of The Signature in the Cell, and one of the editors of this new Crossway anthology, Theistic Evolution. It may be tempting to see the biological wonders Doug Axe describes and think, isn't evolution grand? Isn't the joint mechanism of random mutation and natural selection a real wonder worker? But in this 2-minute clip, Stephen Meyer describes the surprising limits of natural selection.
First of all, the mechanisms that the theistic evolutionists propose are the means by which God created are themselves demonstrably not creative. That's a big problem. It's just a scientific problem. Mutation and natural selection, for very many reasons, are now understood to have very limited creative power. In particular, they don't seem to be very good at generating novelty, new form, and the new information necessary to build it. They do a good job. These are true mechanisms. They are really, nobody in our volume doubts that natural selection and random mutation or random variation is a genuine biological process. What we do doubt is that those mechanisms have the power to generate fundamentally new forms of life and even fundamentally new proteins, which are the smallest unit of innovation in the history of life. To build anything new in life, you've got to have new DNA code, which would produce a new protein fold. And for some technical reasons we go into in the book, we don't think that the Darwinian mechanism can generate novel protein structure. And we also, and many other scientists beyond the ones in this book, are questioning the idea that it can generate new biological form, new body plans, for example. So you hear lots of evolutionary biologists today saying things like, natural selection explains the survival but not the arrival of the fittest. It does a good job of explaining things like beaks getting a little bit bigger and a little bit smaller, adaptation to environmental change, but it doesn't do a good job of explaining where you get birds in the first place. So to attribute to that mechanism the creativity of the creator is scientifically problematic because the mechanism lacks creativity. Why would you say that's God's way of creating when the mechanism itself lacks creativity, and leading people in evolutionary biology today are providing very good reasons for doubting precisely that capacity of the mechanism?
So there is growing scientific evidence that natural selection cannot produce novel biological forms. That's a negative argument against neo-Darwinism. But as Axe notes, there is also positive evidence for intelligent design in the fact that even relatively simple biological forms are more technologically sophisticated than intelligently designed things like smartphones. Meyer takes the positive case for intelligent design another step into the realm of information.
One of the most important discoveries in modern biology occurred in the 1950s during a period that historians call the molecular biological revolution. We all know about Watson and Crick. 1953, they elucidate the structure of the DNA molecule, the beautiful double helix structure. 4 years later, Francis Crick, who was, by the way, a code breaker in World War II, cracks the ultimate code, and he realizes that along the spine of the double helix molecule, there are these four subunits, chemical subunits, and they're called nucleotide or nucleotide bases. And he postulates that the nucleotide bases are functioning like alphabetic characters in a written language, or the digital characters that we use in computer code today, like zeros and ones, which is to say that the nucleotide bases they don't perform a biological function in virtue of their shape or of their the reactions that they are part of. It's not their chemical or geometric properties that give them their function. It's their sequential arrangement in accord with an independent symbol convention, later discovered and now known as the genetic code. So we have genetic text interpreted by genetic code inside the cell. And Crick postulates that the information along the DNA molecule, inscribed in essentially digital or alphabetic, or some have called it typographic form, is directing the synthesis of the crucial protein molecules that are needed to keep cells alive. It takes about 8 years for his conjecture, his hypothesis, to be confirmed. It's not something that could be confirmed by one simple experiment. But by 1965, biologists on both sides of the Atlantic, in France, the UK, and the US, have figured out that Crick is pretty much right. And this is a mind-blowing stop-press moment in the history of biology, because we essentially have what engineers now call CAD-CAM, computer-assisted design and engineering. If you go down the street from us here to the Boeing plant, you'll find an engineer sitting at consoles writing code that is used to direct the construction of, say, an airplane wing, where the code directs where the rivets are placed on the wing. The same kind of technology, information technology, is at work in every cell of every living organism. That information, the information in the DNA molecule, is directing the construction of the proteins and protein machines that keep cells and organisms alive. So the ultimate question in the origin of life is the question of where does that information come from, both in chemical evolutionary theory, where you're trying to explain the origin of the first cell, and Jim Tour writes about this persuasively, about the problems of this theory persuasively in our book, but also in biological evolutionary theory, where we're trying to account for the origin of new forms of life from simpler pre-existing forms. If you want to give your computer a new function, you've got to give it new code, new software. The same thing turns out to be true in life. If you want to build a new form of life, you have to have new types of cells. New cells require new proteins require new genetic information. And this is what neo-Darwinism really has a hard time explaining, because if you rely on a random method of altering pre-existing code, which is what a mutation is, you're overwhelmingly more likely to degrade that information before you ever get to any new functional sequence or new information that's capable of building a new protein. When I ask this hypothetically to computer programmers, say, now if you take a section of code and you start randomly changing the zeros and ones, are you going to get a new operating system or a new program, or are you going to introduce bugs and glitches before you get there? And they get it right away. This is random changes in functional sequences of information is invariably destructive, and it's not a viable or credible mechanism, a plausible mechanism for generating new forms of information. And yet that's what neo-Darwinism must repair to in this age of molecular biology. And so it's one of the reasons that the mechanism is seen as inadequate. And I have a whole chapter on this in the in the new book.
That was philosopher of science Stephen Meyer, one of the editors of the new Crossway anthology, Theistic Evolution, A Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique. Meyer and Doug Axe make a similar point. The biological world, Carbon Valley, if you will, trumps Silicon Valley. Both realms employ machines and digital information, but the sophistication of Carbon Valley exceeds Silicon Valley by orders of magnitude. There is here, for anyone willing to see it, the signature of intelligent design. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.